This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the partial U.S. government shutdown continues without resolution. It is the longest government shutdown in U.S. history, with at least 800,000 employees not getting paychecks because of a budget impasse over border wall funding. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. In early December 2018, when Republicans controlled both chambers of Congress, there was a bipartisan consensus on keeping the government open without wall funding, at least through February 2019. However, conservative talk radio hosts apparently convinced U.S. President Donald Trump not to accept this compromise. It is important to note that during his campaign for the presidency, Mr. Trump asserted that Mexico would pay for the wall he advocated. On January 3, 2019, Democrats regained control of the House of Representatives, and they have argued a two-step solution: fund the remaining agencies of the federal government, and then engage in a comprehensive debate over immigration reform and border security. Democrats agree on the need to combat illegal immigration and illicit drugs, but they disagree over the means and funding levels to do it. Many moderate Republicans share this view. Well, as if the partial government shutdown isn't enough, the New York Times recently reported that after President Trump fired the FBI Director James Comey in 2017, the Bureau opened a secret counterintelligence investigation into President Trump's possible covert relationship with Russia. The possibility that Mr. Trump might be working with Russia, a foreign adversary, and therefore be a national security threat to the United States, could be one of the most serious allegations against a U.S. president in history. Furthermore, the Washington Post reported that Mr. Trump had gone out of his way as president to hide the details of his many private discussions with President Vladimir Putin of Russia, even from members of his own administration. Normally, on this January edition of the program, we focus almost exclusively on the 2019 legislative agenda for a brand new Congress, and that's the 116th U.S. Congress this year. The new democratically controlled House of Representatives under Speaker Nancy Pelosi's leadership boasts a record number of women, 106 Democrats and 20 Republicans. There are many historical firsts, such as the first Muslim women in Congress, the first Native American women, and a record number of veterans, both male and female. Joining us here to discuss the politics of the shutdown, as well as the legislative and oversight agenda for the 116th Congress, are our two veteran political analysts. John Fortier, he's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, a think tank here in Washington, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way, and that's a centrist policy group also based here in Washington. Both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome back to the program.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, sort of. First to you, John Fortier. I say that because I want to remind our listeners or inform them that actually Voice of America is one of those agencies caught up in the shutdown. So even though we have no funding, broadcasters like myself, my engineer, producer, because we're deemed essential, we are required to work and we are working without pay. So it's really rather personal here. John Fortier, no other advanced democracy that I know of has a government shutdown like the United States. Can you explain to our international audience why the world's most powerful democracy is having a shutdown in this manner?
Well, we've had a number of shutdowns before, and we've had real conflict over the budget and appropriations process for quite a while as the political parties have become polarized. I think the big point is that each year, most of our funding for the government has to be passed in a series of appropriations bills. And there has to be some agreement. Even when government is all in one hands, Republicans controlled the House and the Senate and the presidency last Congress, the minority party in the Senate has the ability to block something getting done. So it means getting agreement between both parties, now with the Democrats in charge of the House, Democrats in the House of Representatives, and Senate Republicans and the president would have to agree on spending details. Now, usually we get up to the deadline, we have some issues, we may have a shutdown of some short amount, but there's a lot of pressure to compromise. There is certainly some pressure to compromise now, but I think both sides have really dug in on an issue that is more theological than it is about money. The question of President Trump insists that there be money for a wall related to border security. He was asking for a few billion more than Democrats are willing to give for border security. And the money is very small. The ability to cut a deal in that amount of money would be quite easy. But both sides are dug in saying, oh, we really stand on principle. And the pressure is not so great, I think, as it has been in the past. Only part of the government is shut down. Some workers are performing essential functions. Of course, it is very hard for the workers who are not getting paid. But and I would say generally the president is probably bearing more of the brunt of this politically. He's lost a couple of points on his job approval rating, but not dramatically. And so I think both sides at this point feel not happy, but not so uncomfortable about this situation that I fear that it will go on for a while until there is some greater pressure.
So, Jim Kessler, let's take a look at the politics of this. You know, as I said in the introduction, the end of last year, there was an agreement to open the government, to fund the government through at least February. Mr. Trump agreed to that, and then he disagreed after he heard some radio talk show hosts saying, no, you have to stick with the wall. Now, notwithstanding the merits of border security, many critics say there's a problem with this particular request of funding for a wall, which Mr. Trump said that Mexicans would pay for first. And most reasonable people on both sides of the aisle say, we can discuss this later and look at a broader compromise on border security, immigration reform, the so-called Dreamers, and see if there's some kind of a trade-off. Why are we in this position? Why is Mr. Trump, in a sense, holding federal workers, both those furloughed and those of us who are working for nothing, trying to do the Lord's work, as we say? Why is this going on for $5 billion, which could be easily obtained, you know, afterwards once we open the government?
I think there's a general reason and a specific reason. The general reason is over the last 10, 20 years, and it's getting worse and worse, there's more brinksmanship in Congress and more polarization in Congress than we've ever seen before. So we've had several shutdowns, as John noted, but really they started for the most part in the 1990s and they've accelerated over time. We've also had periods recently where we almost defaulted on the national debt and walked very close to the edge on another issue that really Congress and the White House had always worked together to find some sort of agreement without coming so close to disaster. So I think that in general, that's what's happening in Washington. Specifically, you have a situation where the president over the last 2 years really has not created the conditions of reaching agreement with anyone from the Democratic Party. Basically ridicules them. He does ridiculous tweets. He acts very sort of unstable as a leader. And then there's a point in time where it's like, okay, well, we have to sit down together and work something through. He's backed out of deals before, so including on immigration. So there's the feeling we can't trust him. And then you add the fact to that is Democrats essentially don't want to fund his lie. And the lie is 212 times during his campaign, he said Mexico was going to pay for this silly wall. The wall is a bad idea, and Americans paying for it was not the promise that he made. So Democrats are saying, why should we do this? He's created no conditions for compromise, for working together. This is a campaign promise without real merit, and Mexico is supposed to pay for it.
Well, the Democrats certainly aren't blameless, but nonetheless, John Fortier, what Jim just said, there are facts to bear that out, and that is the fact that Mr. Trump did say that Mexico would pay for the wall. He sort of put this in at the last minute as a brinksmanship. So notwithstanding any faults on the Democratic side, it's understandable that they would say, no, wait a second, let's fund the government and let's discuss this longer-term issue. The facts are that immigrants commit fewer crimes than native-born here in the United States. There hasn't been a terrorist attack from Mexico. And actually, apprehensions at the southern border have declined 75% in the last two decades, all of which doesn't mean that we shouldn't discuss border security. But here we are today at this impasse. Do you see any way of getting out of it anytime soon? How about the Republican-controlled Senate? Because the democratically controlled House of Representatives now under Speaker Pelosi, they have passed all these bills. Let's open the government. All of these bills have been passed, but they need to be taken up by the Senate. But Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has refused to take them up for fear that President Trump might not sign them. But do you see a rising chorus on the part of Republicans seeing that this is actually hurting them, hurting their own senators and poll numbers? What point will there be some give?
Well, I guess I would put it that either side could easily fix this. And it's, again, it's not a lot of money. It's, one could argue whether we should be quibbling about walls or fences or walls that have slats in them, which people have proposed as compromises. It would be easy for either side to give. It wouldn't be a lot of money, but it would be a big give on principle. And I think that both Democrats feel very strongly about this, and the president and, for the most part, the Republican base feel very strongly that the concerns about immigration need to be addressed. And if you just open the government, nothing will happen. And Nancy Pelosi herself said in a meeting that she wasn't really going to be open to thinking about the wall if we just open the government now. So there is a brinksmanship. Sure, one side could back down or not. But one possibility we were talking about for a while was the president using some emergency powers to build the wall or to do some other border security. That's controversial. That might have also been a way out of this, depending on how it was done. That at least has been pushed off the table. Again, there is pressure. Some Republicans seem to be uncomfortable with this, but I would say the pressure is not so great to move on this as it has been in other shutdowns. Otherwise, one side would have done so or not. We've got the longest shutdown that we've ever had. The president's poll numbers may have suffered a tiny bit, but pretty much his support has been consistent with what it has been. His base, I think, would be very unhappy with him seen as capitulating, as the Democrats' base would be as well. So I do worry that this is really a matter of principle, and unless we find some way out like these emergency powers, it could go on for longer.
But once again, as Jim Kessler said, Mr. Trump has a habit of moving the goalpost. Let's say the Democrats say, okay, here's your $5 billion and let's open the government and we'll discuss longer-term border security. And then he'll say, well, no, I want 10 now. But that, again, doesn't excuse the Democrats, Jim Kessler. To what extent do you think there are talks behind the scenes, a sense of give and take? Because, of course, there's the Problem Solvers Caucus, a more moderate group that are talking to the White House. Do you see any kind of movement? And the other concern I have is the long-term implications for the federal government. We're working for free. It's very trying. It's very difficult financially. And this is just a sort of a backdoor way of, you know, reducing government, which is one of the goals of Mr. Trump. He's always talked about his disdain for bureaucracy. He has not had kind words for federal workers. So it's sort of a way for him to accomplish a goal through the back door, which is rather disturbing.
So we're in a lose-lose-lose situation here. The president is losing on this. People don't support his position on the wall, and they think he should compromise. Congress is losing on this. They think, as John noted, the differences are very small, just get this done. And federal workers are losing on this because nearly a million of them are either furloughed or they're working without pay. So we have a situation where we're locked into a battle in which there are absolutely no winners on this. We're also in a situation where the pressure to compromise really hasn't reached a level in which sides are ready to put out a hand and say, let's do this. I think there are two ways that this gets solved. One is, as John mentioned, the president uses emergency powers, which the courts would probably overrule, but it would allow the government to open, and that would be a face-saving measure for the president. The other is that a bipartisan group, probably in the Senate, comes together and puts something forth and gives Donald Trump a little bit of something and gives Democrats a little bit of something, and they say, okay, let's go home and let's do this. When that happens, it's anybody's guess.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. We're discussing the politics of the shutdown, and we'll soon begin discussing the legislative agenda for the 116th U.S. Congress and challenges in an era of divided government. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to our valued Facebook fan, David Ochele Ogoda from Abuja, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, John Fortier, when we get over this terrible impasse vis-a-vis funding for the government, how do you see the new democratically controlled House of Representatives going forward in terms of a legislative agenda, part of which will be oversight, which many critics say was not really done during the first 2 years of President Trump's term? How are they gearing up for the year?
Well, I think you see the new majority is Democrats are enthusiastic about being in power of one branch. There are new and diverse members. I think for the most part, because they've retained Nancy Pelosi and experienced leadership, that this energy is probably going in a good direction. I think some would point to some of the new members being very activist and sometimes pushing a little bit against leadership. So there will be some tensions. But, you know, I think overall, the election has gone well for Democrats and it's a good time. Will there be oversight? Absolutely. Will there be pushes to retain the Mueller investigation, to bring back witnesses that they didn't feel like they got enough from in the Republican Congress, and all sorts of other oversight in other areas? You know, I think one of the big questions people will ask is, will there be some overreach? As always is the case, some of the more liberal members are calling now for things that push closer to impeachment of Donald Trump. Maybe that's premature. And leaders like Nancy Pelosi are trying to both use that energy, but also kind of cabinet and push away from those sort of things. So I think those are the kinds of things that Democrats will face. I mean, ultimately, when we get past this shutdown, I still think there are the possibilities for a few places of compromise between the Democrats and Donald Trump, although the feelings are pretty hard and the positions are quite far away. I don't think we should expect a huge agenda on that, but you know, I think there are some possibilities of work on infrastructure or drug pricing, or we saw the end of last Congress criminal justice reform. So there always are possibilities, but the big point will be oversight and putting out an agenda that's different. It just shows that Democrats believe in different things and not to get passed into law, but really to be there as a statement of what they believe in.
So, Jim Kessler, oversight seems to be the watchword. As we're seeing the Russia investigation moving apace under Special Counsel Robert Mueller, more and more revelations, disconcerting ones with respect to President Trump and the fact that most recently we note that the FBI began investigating after he fired FBI Director Comey in May of 2017, that President Trump was seen as potentially working with Russia. Now, this isn't something secret because he's never said a bad word about Vladimir Putin. He seems to condemn or criticize our traditional allies and cozy up to the likes of Vladimir Putin. How do you see the Democrats using their newfound power as the majority in at least the House of Representatives?
Definitely oversight will be a big part of what Democrats do. If you look at the last 2 years in the House in particular, the House has a large oversight role. You would think the biggest problem facing the entire country was Hillary Clinton's emails. And there was virtually nothing that looked at Russia relationship with Donald Trump and all of the other things that were happening in the Trump administration that showed that there was corruption going on. I mean, there were so many cabinet members in the Trump administration in the first 2 years that had to resign. It was striking. So you're going to see some really strong oversight and investigations. The Democrats who are running those committees are seasoned, mature members of Congress. They'll probably do a very comprehensive job on that. Will there be areas for compromise? In one sense, you could be hopeful because Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer on the Democratic side are deal cutters, and so is Mitch McConnell, and Kevin McCarthy is new as the top leader on the Republican House side, but all indications are that he's a pretty good deal cutter as well. And we have a president who wrote a book called Art of the Deal. So despite having five people who fancy themselves as deal cutters, I think almost nothing will get done. I think this will be a very intransigent period. I think Donald Trump wants to run against a Congress that is not doing anything. I think that's part of his strategy. And I think Republicans are also, they don't know how to handle this president going into the next 2 years, whether he's going to be a liability on the reelection or an asset.
Well, back to you, John Fortier. And we're witnessing confirmation hearings for Donald Trump's pick for Attorney General, William Barr. That's a very important position because he would ostensibly oversee the Russia investigation. Some are saying that Special Counsel Robert Mueller is just about finishing up. We don't know. What do you know about that? And what's the significance of these hearings for William Barr? And do you believe he will be confirmed? And what does that mean for Mr. Trump and the Congress going forward?
Well, I do think William Barr will be confirmed in the next couple of weeks or so, unless something comes out that's more surprising than has come out already. He's a former attorney general. It's a long time ago, but has a good reputation. But this set of hearings has really been there to emphasize some of the points of disagreement between the parties and to air some of the questions about the Mueller investigation. Will there be a report? Will the attorney general insert himself in that process? And look, I think Bill Barr has essentially said that he will protect that investigation, but there are questions on the Democratic side about, well, will he keep some of the details secret at the end? What will be the result? What will be his role? Will he recuse himself from certain parts of things? And these questions have come up. So I don't expect him to get a lot of Democratic support, mostly because they are sending a signal that they are worried about Donald Trump, and they think that the investigation of him has to proceed, and that anybody who might be a little bit soft on that is not their candidate. But I think ultimately Republicans have the votes.
How do you see William Barr as the new attorney general, the head of the Justice Department, Jim Kessler? Will Democrats go along with that? As we said earlier, you know, this is very important with respect to Robert Mueller's investigation, whether or not the report will be released to the public in full. And this is important information for the American public.
Barr does not need Democratic support to be confirmed, and I expect he'll get every vote from Republicans. His performance during the hearings, it reassured Democrats on probably 75-80% of the things they were worried about with Barr, about whether the Mueller investigation would be allowed to continue unfettered. I thought Barr gave the answers that would satisfy Democrats. There were some answers that were not satisfactory to Democrats having to do with the Mueller investigation, and that was whether this report, when it's released, would be made public. Some of that is up to the discretion of the Justice Department. Barr was vague on that. On some of the other questions having to do with more traditional policy issues like legalization of marijuana and incarceration of nonviolent criminals, he didn't go as far as Democrats would want him to go, but he was different than the sort of lock-em-up attorney general that he was in the 1980s under George H.W. Bush. I expect he'll get some Democratic votes. I don't think he'll get many, but I think he'll get some.
Well, back to you, John Fortier. We know we have a Republican-controlled Senate, and that's a very important chamber because they have the power to approve judicial nominations, the cabinet appointments, as we're seeing with William Barr. So as we go forward, are we looking at a lot of gridlock? And what about these allegations against President Trump that he's more in the pocket of Vladimir Putin, at least apparently from his behavior, concealing notes from his own national security team? This doesn't really bode well. How do you see going forward this third year for Mr. Trump? Are you concerned with respect to the viability of his presidency and potential for other revelations that could hurt the integrity of the office and him in particular in his inner circle?
I'm slightly more optimistic than Jim Kessler about the gridlock, but only slightly. I think it's a possibility to do some limited things if the stars align, and we should shoot for that. I will note that, of course, you mentioned the Mueller investigation or other allegations regarding Russia. Those are still undetermined. If there's a bombshell that comes out, that could change everything. I will say, even though there is information damaging to the president, certainly he's unhappy about the investigation. I think right now both sides are sort of locked in and seeing what they want to see, and I'm not sure that that is going to change unless something big comes out. The other factor I would note is we know that the 2020 election is coming up, and we've already seen in recent times 4 United States female senators announcing for president. We will see some other senators announcing as well. So the Senate will have a significant number of senators who are actually running for president. That makes them more political, if you want to put it that way. They're going to be more likely to be sounding the alarm against Donald Trump than wanting to compromise with him. As the election gets closer, as the primaries get closer in 2020, early 2020, that window for doing something will shrink even more. So I'm slightly more optimistic than Jim, but only slightly more.
Well, Jim, you get the last word on that. And particularly, you may want to talk about the Democratic presidential hopefuls that we've seen make announcements in the last weeks.
Yeah, so 2020 is already gearing up. There are some very attractive candidates running for president out of the United States Senate. Elizabeth Warren is definitely going to be one of the front runners. Amy Klobuchar is making noises. She's from Minnesota, a bit more centrist. Bernie Sanders, of course. Michael Bennett from Colorado is thinking about it. Sherrod Brown from Ohio brings more of a blue-collar aspect. And there are others, Kamala Harris from California.
Cory Booker.
Kirsten Gillibrand. There's a lot of names out there. Here's the problem that they all have. Washington is despised. So this is a hard place to say, this is the change that the country needs. So you might see 20 people running for president, you know, in the Democratic primary, maybe 10 from the United States Congress and 10 from outside of the United States Congress. Everyone's focusing on those inside the United States Congress right now because they have the big names. But voters might say, you know what? I want something very different. I don't want someone who's part of this mess. And I think everybody who's running, very, very qualified people from the United States Senate, exciting candidates, new faces, diverse, they're carrying the burden of Washington on their back. So I think that's going to be a bit of an albatross for all of them.
Well, we shall see if others emerge, and there's a lot to do in the meantime. Let's get the government open. On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, as always, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, thanks for a lively and thoughtful discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.